is Matt Connickson. I'm a sales agronomist with CHX Ag Services in Oakley, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Good afternoon. Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Don Wick, reporting direct from the USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum in Arlington, Virginia. We have Jamie Dickerman in studio, and we'll have an update from the International Crop Expo with Tyler Donaldson. This 102nd USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum is one of the biggest events of the year for the Ag Department. Trade was the focus right off the bat this morning. In the past, most countries did little to address non-tariff barriers to U.S. farm commodities. Julie Callahan, who serves as the Chief Agricultural Trade Negotiator in the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, says that has changed in the Trump administration.
It's really a unique opportunity to have a president that comes out and says, you know what, access to the U.S. market should not be considered a given or a right. And a lot of our trading partners in the past have felt that they could treat American companies and American farmers as badly as they wanted, and they would still have access to our market. And our market is a very valuable, lucrative market for other countries to ship products. Now we have a president that's willing to police that market and say, if you're not treating our farmers appropriately, you're going to have consequences.
Callahan emphasized the goal is to move the U.S. agricultural trade deficit into a surplus. Callahan said there is reason for optimism on that.
This is a time where at USTR, we really have the political backing. The first day our chief of staff came in to meet with me, he said, you can be as aggressive as you want with other countries. And I said, we haven't really met before, so I'm not sure you understand what that really means. But I will say it's a refreshing opportunity for USTR to have the political backing across the board to get that reciprocity and to ensure that trading partners all over the world are treating U.S. farmers and ranchers the way they should be.
Callahan was joined by USDA Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs, South Dakota native Luke Lindberg, in this trade discussion.
What excites me the most is that as we level the playing field, I think U.S. agriculture wins when we have a fair chance to compete, but I also think one of our hallmarks is our ability to innovate. And I think that our folks are going to create products that are going to sell in different and unique ways around the world that we've never even thought of before. And to me, that's where American agriculture shines and where we outcompete our competition around the world is exactly in that space. And that's where the excitement comes from for me for 26 and beyond.
The Red River Farm Network coverage from the USDA Ag Outlook Forum made possible by Ag Country Farm Credit Services. With more farm news, here's Jamie Dickerman.
Thank you, Don. Well, as expected, USDA is projecting a decline in corn acres and more soybean acres this spring. Those numbers released this morning in conjunction with the USDA Ag Outlook Forum. Corn forecast 94 million acres, down from 98.8 million acres last year. Soybeans estimated at 85 million, up from just 81 million acres last year. And soybean ending stocks flat with last year, while corn stocks expected to tighten but remain at comfortable levels. In the first official USDA forecast for 2026, sugar beet production is projected to total short tons raw value. That's a 2% decline from last year. The stocks-to-use ratio is 14.1%, down from nearly 16% this past year. Overall, sugar imports forecast to increase another 500,000 short tons from this past year. Class 3 milk prices are forecast to average $16.65 per hundredweight this year. That is down from $18 in 2025. Feed prices favorable, but dairy cow numbers projected to increase. Entering 2025, the number of dairy heifers available for replacement was the lowest on record since 1990. The number of first calf dairy heifers was the lowest since 2019, when this estimate was first recorded. And cattle prices will push higher again in 2026. The steer price forecast to average $240 per hundredweight, 7% higher than the previous year. Tight supplies and continued strong consumer demand will underscore the fed cattle trade. For feeder cattle, 750 to 800 pound calves expected to average $364 per hundredweight. That's up 13% from the 2025 average. Hog and lamb prices are projected to see slightly higher average prices this year. Well, the snow isn't quite done with us just yet. And today, isolated the scattered snow showers lingering across the region into the evening, along with areas of blowing snow. 4 to 6 inches already on the ground in many spots, up to a foot in parts of the region, including the Devil's Lake Basin. Roads are slick out there. Another 1 to 2 inches possible before the showers taper off late tonight. Winds gusting 25 to 35 miles per hour, keeping the travel conditions a bit challenging. Tomorrow morning, a few light snow showers with lows in the upper single digits, low teens, highs in the teens to near 20. In the weekend, colder, single-digit morning lows, highs in the teens under a mix of sun and clouds. Next week starts below average with sub-zero to low single-digit mornings. There's a warm-up into the 20s, low 30s by Tuesday, but then another chance of snow or a wintry mix possible. World Weather Incorporated reports rain continues to support crop areas across Brazil and Argentina. In Brazil, frequent rounds of rain expected through next week, maintaining favorable soil moisture for developing corn and soybean crops. Northern areas remain the wettest, which may slow field work but benefit safrinha corn ahead of the dry season. Temperatures, they're staying mostly in the 80s and 90s with some low 100s possible. In Argentina, recent heavy rain has improved soil moisture in key production areas, with more showers expected into the weekend and again March 1st through the 5th. Some drier pockets could see stress return briefly, but overall moisture trends are stabilizing. Cooler temperatures move in before a gradual warm-up early next week. Reporting Agriculture's Business, you're listening to the Red River Farm Network. Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. It's day two of the International Crop Expo in Grand Forks. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Tyler Donaldson has this report from the Alaris Center.
Speaking with AgVice soil scientist John Brecker. John, you were set to present yesterday on soil sampling and just updated trends here throughout the region. Can you just share with us some of the highlights from that?
Yeah, so some of the major highlights from this past year was soil nitrate testing, which is kind of always the driver behind soil testing in our region. And I think one of the things that people were surprised by was the amount of nitrate left over after some of our crops, wheat, corn in particular. I think many people forgot how dry we were throughout the entire first half of the growing season, especially in the northern Red River Valley and the northern tiers of North Dakota and Minnesota. So saw lots of nitrate left after wheat, and then also coming after corn, where a lot of areas had on average 45 to 50 pounds of nitrogen after corn. In fact, actually, if you looked into the data a little bit more, 30% of the corn fields that we had coming in last fall had more than 60 pounds of N. So with corn, soybean, wheat prices all playing together, with this much nitrate left over, a lot of people are thinking about corn on corn for next year more than in previous years. So on top of that, phosphorus is definitely the other big topic. It is not cheap this year. It hasn't been cheap for the past 3 years, but definitely more so this year. So for people who have been doing a good job of managing their phosphorus fertility in the, say the medium to high range, this might be the year where you decide to pull some of that phosphorus out of the bank and, take advantage of what you've invested in previous years.
A lot of areas really got a lot of rain, especially later in the fall post-harvest and everything, and a lot of that still in the ground. How's that affect things here come springtime?
Some of the early sampled wheat fields from last fall, they may have moved some nitrate lower in the profile, but remember, we were dry before, so we did have a little bit of a soil profile to refill, so I'm not as worried about it all leaching. Now, when we saw the corn fields that finally got sampled, if we remember this past fall, throughout most of October, we didn't really get into corn harvest until kind of the end of October, and that was after the rain had already happened. So when corn crops finally got harvested and fields got sampled in late October, early November before freeze up, that was all after we had rainfall that caused some leaching, and we still had high amounts of nitrate hanging around.
For the Red River Farm Network, I'm Tyler Donaldson.
USDA Chief Economist Justin Benavides has been on the job for a matter of weeks and is now overseeing the Ag Department's annual Outlook Conference. Over the past 10 years, Benavides and agriculture are facing headwinds from large supplies interrupted by brief moments of price support from black swan events. So what's the outlook for 2026?
The story for the year is progress being made on price. not hitting it out of the park, not solving everyone's problems in terms of pricing overnight, but prices generally expected to move modestly higher. We see about a dime increase in price per bushel for both corn, beans, and wheat.
USDA economists said the federal support will only increase this year.
Direct government payments here in 2026 are forecast at roughly $44 billion, or 25% of net cash farm income. We know that about $10 billion of that $44 billion is a result of losses that were borne out in 2023 and 2024. So those are those programs that were passed out of the American Relief Act that have not yet been distributed. So that $44 billion is a result of the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program, a result of increased safety net payments coming out of the One Big Beautiful Bill, and then that $10 billion that remains coming out of the American Relief Act that is being distributed, I think, as we speak.
The USDA is stepping in to support dairy producers. The National Milk Producers Federation is praising USDA and Secretary Brooke Rollins for announcing $148 million in Section 32 dairy purchases, matching a request NMPF made last November. The purchases are designed to boost low milk prices and expand dairy consumption, including the first major federal butter purchase in 5 years. The package includes $75 million in butter, $32.5 million in cheddar cheese, $20.5 million in fresh fluid milk, $10 million in Swiss cheese, and $10 million in ultra-high temperature milk. The dairy purchases part of a broader $263 million USDA commodity buy that also includes $80 million for specialty crops and $100 million for seafood. NMPF President and CEO Greg Dowd says the additional demand will provide important relief for dairy farmers struggling alongside the broader ag economy. This is the Red River Farm Network. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Water hemp continues to expand its footprint across North Dakota and western Minnesota, creating new challenges for dry bean growers. NDSU Extension weed specialist Joe Eichley says the spread of herbicide-resistant water hemp is becoming a growing concern.
So first, just want to talk more about water hemp this winter because the footprint continues to grow across the state of North Dakota, and that can be reflected in the northern counties of Minnesota as well. So my maps will all be North Dakota-based just because that's where I'm in charge of mapping things. But anything along the river, you can almost mirror that to the other side of the river for what's going on. But essentially, here, if the county is in green, we found at least one water hemp population. Now, this doesn't give the density of water hemp across these geographies, but particularly the northern part of the valley, where we get into some of the peak dry bean growing areas, we were seeing more and more water hemp, and the 2025 growing season was no exception.
Eichley says between the weed spread, resistance to Group 14 herbicides making control more difficult.
So if I wanted to oversimplify things and talk about if we have a water hemp population that is PPO resistant, and I should point out, if you haven't dealt with water hemp, it is going to be glyphosate and ALS or group 2 resistant. And so that's where we want to start clean. I highlighted in red this utility of sulfentrazone or Spartan from a residual standpoint because this will be reduced in a group 14 population. So sulfentrazone or Spartan is generally one of our better water hemp products. But once we get resistance to group 14 herbicides, if we were to generalize, it basically cuts the amount of residual control we get in half.
Checking quotes right now, Minneapolis wheat May is up 7.5, 592.5. Chicago May up 12.25, 564.75. March Kansas City up 11.75, 562.75. March corn is down 1.5 right now, 425.75. March soybeans, we're up 6 cents at 11.39.5. This is the Red River Farm Network.